Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. And with me today, I have Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to be here. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, John.
It's great to have both of you here. And it's also great that Jamf Now is our sponsor today, and it's a pretty awesome service that I'm using. We'll talk about that soon, but I want to just jump right into topics. So we're going to start with 1Password today, and specifically what we're talking about is the news that Apple has decided they're going to give a license to 1Password to all of their employees. And that's not just corporate, that's retail also. So every employee can get it. And if you have family members, you can get a family license. So that means up to 5 people for each employee can get a license for 1Password, which is pretty cool. And I think that says a lot about Apple and how they're looking at password management, and probably says a little bit about Keychain as well, maybe. But I bet you guys have some thoughts on this.
I think it could be the worst thing that could ever happen to AgileBits.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Okay, explain to me why.
Well, now Apple has a say in this product that they've adopted. They're going to want certain things. They're going to have AgileBits jumping through the hoops to make sure that it meets Apple's needs. Apple is going to feel empowered now to make demands on AgileBits. If there's something, one little thing or a couple little things they don't like, if Apple has to make some changes to iOS, then it's going to be sort of a touch and go on who makes the changes first and who supports who and how fast it happens. I just think that this could be a difficult thing for AgileBits to go through. They're going to be working late nights. That's my guess.
So this is basically Apple's way of buying AgileBits without actually buying them.
Hey, there you go. Yeah.
All right, Kelly, what do you think?
Well, that's the thing that I was wondering about was I'm going to go ahead and take a guess that there's not another organization that has purchased 100,000 licenses from AgileBits. So if that's the case, then it does absolutely to me sound like exactly what John is describing, which is, Apple's going to come to them and say, we need it to do this. We want it to do that. And you know, at what point does Apple get to just make those sort of declarations? Because we've all heard Apple make some what seem like nonsensical or unwise statements or moves in different ways, you know, depending on what the decision was that they made. Like they've gotten legitimate criticism. I mean, Apple always takes criticism. We know that. But legit criticism is a thing that they don't necessarily have to answer for. And, you know, what does Agile do when the thing that Apple wants is the thing that they don't want to do? Now, on the other hand, I understand why Apple might want to do this, because 1Password is a solid piece of software. It's like the most boring review you can give something that you use all the time. Every time I try to use it, it just works. Mm-hmm. It does what I want it to do. It doesn't get in my way. It's not a pest. It's not overloading my screen with notifications. It does what I need. It fills in my passwords, whether I'm on this screen, that screen, or the other screen. All of it works. It's pretty great. And, you know, that's the kind of review lots of software should have. Like, it does what I want it to do, and then it gets out of the way the rest of the time. And that's one of the things that I think I sort of worry about is not necessarily Apple dictating terms so that it's unfortunate for AgileBits, but Apple dictates some feature or something and then the rest of the user base suffers. So unless we know a bunch more about this agreement, I would sort of wonder about the future of it as a person who would be a 1Password user who does not work for Apple. What does this mean for me? Because I can request a feature, but I'm not Apple. So, you know, if I want something, or if there's something, if Apple wants something that goes against what I need out of my workflow or some security decision that I've made, you know, and Apple's made a different one. Like, it's fine if Apple wants to make a different one, but what if now that decision Apple has made is now forced upon me because I'm also a 1Password customer? That seems unwise.
And it could go the other way too, Kelly. It could go the way that AgileBits sees a business opportunity in the marketplace or a technological imperative they want to pursue, and they can't do it because Apple says it would be out of compliance with their standard or what they need. And so Agile can't grow and expand and might come to the point where they maybe they have to force themselves into having two different versions, one for Apple and one for the public. And we know how they'll love that.
And that's going to be fun. One thing that's interesting to me about this as a spectator and all of this is that one thing that AgileBits prides themselves on with 1Password is security. And part of the reason they pride themselves on that security is because of its transparency. If you want to know how they're doing what they're doing, they will tell you. There's nothing secret about how 1Password keeps your secrets. Like, which sounds counterintuitive, but it makes it so that there's not a security hole. It makes it so there's not, you know, something that is possible for somebody to exploit. And the reason this is interesting is because if you've ever looked at any of like 1Password support forums and things, people talk about having lost, forgotten, whatever, their master password and needing it reset. And they go to Agile and go, well, of course, AgileBits, you have a way to do this, don't you? And the line from AgileBits is, no, we don't have a way to reset your password for you. You have it. It's yours. If you don't know it, we can't help you. We don't know your master password and we don't want to know your master password. Because if there was a way for us to get it as the good guys, there would be a way for, if there was a way for anyone to get it, then anyone could get it. And I wonder how well that's going to sit in Cupertino. That's a thing that I'm very curious about.
That will be interesting to see. I'm wondering if this will lead to tighter integration, not only with 1Password, but with other password management applications. So, you know, we know this fall we're getting hooks in iOS. Or is it also macOS? I can't remember now. For third-party password managers.
Well, specifically, I believe it was iOS that we saw it on, because the bonus piece of that password management was when you get the verification code, it can automatically fill on your phone.
Right. Okay, yeah. So we're seeing that tighter integration there. And maybe this means that Apple's going to do more to make sure that 1Password and potentially other third-party password managers fit even more transparently into our daily lives on our Macs and our iPhones and iPads. I would be okay with that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, the hopeful way to consider this is that it's entirely possible. Part of the reason they are doing this is because they want to be able to play nice with non-Apple software, and particularly in this space.
Yeah.
So I would like to think that that's what's happening, and I would hope that that's what's happening.
I hope so, too. And either way, I'll be watching closely to see what happens with 1Password on iOS and macOS going forward. And AgileBits came right out and said the rumor that they were in negotiations to be bought by Apple is flat out wrong. That's not happening. So if you saw those reports yesterday, don't worry about it. AgileBits says, nope, they are not on the market.
All right.
All right. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Agile. No, it's not AgileBits. That's who makes 1Password.
That rumor is also untrue.
I bet they want to be our sponsor, though.
They probably do. Yep. So maybe that was foreshadowing. I don't know. Anyhow, our sponsor today is Jamf Now. And Jamf Now is actually really cool. I use it all the time to keep track of all of my iOS and macOS devices, so like my MacBook Pro, my iPhone, my iPads, and I'm keeping track of my parents' iPhones and iPads and Mac. And it's great because I'm doing exactly what a business wants to do, which is to keep track of all of those technology assets that they have to make sure that everything is running the right operating system, that everything has passwords set on it, and that they're secure passwords so that I know what apps are installed and can keep track of all of the various settings for all these devices so that I know they're set up the way they should be, just like an IT department would want to do. And if you have a family where you need to keep track of all those devices, or if you have a business where you want to do this and not spend a fortune, Jamf Now is a great way to do that. It's a very affordable, easy to use device management system. So I'm using it for all of my stuff. I think you guys should be using it as well because it's that good and it's really economical. So what you can do is just go and sign up for an account. It's free, and it's always free. And the first three devices will be free forever as well. So that means if you have, say, a Mac, an iPhone, and an iPad, you can put all of those into your Jamf account. And then later on, you upgrade your iPhone to a new model. Just take the old one out of your Jamf account and put the new one in. And you still have three devices, and it's still free. And it's really awesome. If you have more than three devices, it's not expensive. $2 per device per month. That's it. And it's just such a slick system, and their web interface is easy to use. And I love just having this grid on my screen where I can just look at all the devices, and I know at a glance if everything is up to date and working the way I expect. So head over to their website, jamf.com, JAMF.com/TDO, jamf.com/TDO, and sign up for your Jamf Now account and start managing your devices today. You'll be happy that you did. Thank you, Jamf Now, for being our sponsor. Okay, the other thing that that I want to talk about today is, the catalyst for this is Affinity Designer coming out for the iPad. And this is a professional level vector art application. And it's been available on the Mac for a while, just like Affinity Photo. And Affinity Photo, which is a professional level photo raster image editing application, that came out for the iPad a year ago. And I'd been using it for a while on my Mac, got it right away from my iPad. Now we have Affinity Designer, so we can do vector stuff on our iPads. And it's a pro-level app. I've already downloaded it to my iPad Pro, but we're recording, so I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, okay, we just had the 10th anniversary of the App Store. There are a ton of apps, a ton of high-quality apps on the App Store. And I feel like I'm getting more and more professional level apps on my iPad Pro. So I'm wondering, have we reached the point where for a lot of people, an iPad can be their primary computer?
What do you guess? It depends. It depends on whether the app is the one you live in and you live within the constraints of that app. And you have, say, a 12-inch, for example, iPad, and you live in a particular app that's very productive for you, like Affinity Designer. Mm-hmm. And that's where you live and that's where you work and you can get your work done. But the thing that people keep forgetting when we talk about this subject is that forevermore, there will be a fundamental difference in the security design of iOS and macOS. macOS is what it is and it's designed the way it is to provide great cross-app and cross-data flexibility. That just is never going to be in a secure iOS system. And so while you can have great apps and maybe interaction between apps and Dropbox and a files app, there's going to be a limit on things you're not going to be able to do as completely as you could do on a Mac. Now, if you don't need to do those things, that's great. You can get your work done. But then iOS is never going to replace macOS.
I don't think
it's meant to.
It's not.
There you go.
But it's a flathead screwdriver or a Phillips screwdriver. Sometimes you can use one of them, depending on the screws you have, Sometimes one will work for both because sure. some screws have that, you know, notch in the top, and sometimes no. But here's the thing that I think gets overlooked whenever people have this conversation is that technological honesty, which is the drum I've been beating for a long, long time, which is if people sit down and think about it and stop being conditioned by the megahertz nonsense that we used to have where, you know, you had to buy a new computer every 2 years or whatever because it was twice as fast as the last one. Like, we've gotten to the point where that's not a thing you have to really worry about anymore. Like, everything's plenty fast. It's going to be plenty fast for a long time to come. You know, the bottleneck at this point is your ISP. You know, it's not the processor in your computer. And like, there's a lot of other things that go into my computer is slow, but it's still not what it used to be. You know, when you sit and think about how long it takes something to load. And if people sit down and think about, like, here's what I do on my computer. And if the bulk of what you are doing with that computer is looking at websites, maybe doing some banking, or, you know, some other sort of like financial business handling. Maybe you log into your bank and pay some bills, and you like to maybe play some games or video calls with the family, you know, that lives someplace else. Check your email. Like, an iPad is more than adequate and has been more than adequate for that for a long time. And for some people, that's all they need. And the thing that's interesting to me is the expansion in the types of users and the different kinds of things they use that are now offered at a level that make the iPad at least a compelling ancillary device, not just, you know, maybe it's not your only computer, but if you want to go out and about for the day, you can take your iPad with you instead of your whole computer and get most of what you want done. You know, like if you want to use an artistic app, you know, an iPad Pro and an Apple Pencil will get you an easy way to have a sketchbook with an infinite number of pages in it just by taking your iPad with you. And, you know, if that's all you need to take with you for the day, that's a lot easier than a sketchbook and a whole bunch of colored pencils and a pencil sharpener and a box for all the pencils to go in and on and on. So, you know, there's a certain amount, I think, that can go into some of this. And it's, and the part I've enjoyed watching is how much more useful it gets for all kinds of different people. You know, initially it was very easy to see where maybe a photographer would do great with an iPad because it's way more screen than a phone, especially when the iPad was first released. Think about how much more screen an iPad had initially than an iPhone did.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, was a very easy thing to see right off the top, you know, photo and video, and it gets more and they've added more, you know, because with the pencil and with really cool apps like Linnea and Taiyasui Sketches and all those sorts of things, like you can do a whole lot of really great stuff with just an iPad and a stylus. You know, some things require an Apple Pencil, but some will take any other kind of stylus. And you can continue to see the utility in a lot of that. So people who are doing professional work are getting more and more opportunities to at least turn the iPad into a sidekick on a short trip. And that's the part that's fun to watch.
Let me pose a question to you. I agree that if you were going to go out for the day and needed to be able to access the internet, you'd grab an iPad and have your phone, of course. But what if you were going to go on a 2-week vacation trip to a ski area or to the Bahamas where you could only take one device? Would you take your MacBook or would you take your iPad for 2 weeks?
Well, 2 weeks of what, though? If I'm not expected to be doing any work, I'm absolutely
going to take my iPad. The normal course of the work you do, it's writing, creating, reading, storing, adjusting.
For me, as long as it doesn't involve podcasting, or at least me having to record a podcast.
No, I mean your normal work. Your normal work.
Well, if I'm going on vacation, I'm not doing my normal work.
Well, I'm working vacation. That's why we're having a hard time. Come on, play along with me here now. Play along with me. Working vacation.
All right. So if I'm doing a working vacation, then I'm not going to record a podcast. I can take my iPad Pro.
Jeff, work with me.
All right.
You need a MacBook Pro and a microphone.
I would need my MacBook Pro and my microphone. However, that would no longer be vacation for me. I would be working off-site. I mean, that's it.
I'm going to strangle him.
Yeah, well, the parameters you're giving me, they don't fit my real-world scenarios.
Exactly.
Yeah. When I go away and I need to record podcasts, I am not on vacation, period. So it means I'm at a conference, I'm at a trade show, I'm at some other event where I need to have my my full working rig, which will be a MacBook Pro and a microphone.
Sure.
If I'm going someplace where we'll call it a working vacation, then to me that means I do not have to record a podcast. And what I've done when I've gone away for a week or longer where I'm not recording a show, I take my iPad Pro and I can do everything that I need on that short of podcasting. And now I have OmniFocus, OmniOutliner, OmniGraffle, Ulysses. And so with that little group of apps right there, tied in with using Apple's Files app and Dropbox and iCloud, I'm accomplishing everything that I need to make happen all the time. And now getting to add in Affinity Designer, I have a pro level vector editing app. I was using OmniGraffle as my tablet vector graphics tool. So, yeah, short of podcasting, I can do pretty much everything that I would otherwise do on a daily basis with an iPad Pro now, which to me is just crazy and also really cool.
When I run across a frustration, it just reminds me that if I were going to do the same thing, I would grab my MacBook. I'm a Mac OS person through and through, and I'm a person who works comfortably and easily in Mac OS to do everything I need to do. And the MacBook is so small, has a built-in keyboard. I mean, it's it for me.
And since John is a robot, he spends all his time in clean rooms anyway, so he'll never get dust under the keyboard and have trouble with it.
That's
I haven't had any problems with my MacBook keyboard.
That's because you live in a clean room. We just covered this.
I don't eat my lunch with cookies over the keyboard. No, I don't.
Well, that's because you just don't know how to live. All right. So I think what we've established is exactly what you said right at the beginning of the segment, John, which is it depends.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting closer to a point where a lot of people can look at an iPad as their primary computer.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I think the number of people that can do that is growing. We're still not at a place where everyone could say, yeah, you know, I can do an iPad instead of a Mac and I'll be just fine for everything.
I would say personal computing. For a lot of people, it would make a good personal computer. Like maybe your work machine, desktop or laptop or whatever, is still a thing that you have to use all day, every day, because reasons. But for yourself, for your own computing needs that are slightly more than what your phone can do for you, or that your comfort level is, like, you know, I want a bigger screen or whatever. I think that's the difference for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. Hey, we are out of time, so we need to wrap up. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me as well. Bye, Kelly.
Bye, John.
It's always fun to have both of you on the show. And thank you to Jamf Now for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, jamf.com, jamf.com/TDO. Sign up for your free account and start managing your devices today, just like I'm doing. And listeners, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.